situations when the country is facing a deficit in terms of oil. But I think long term, it's really a broader question about proper fiscal and economic planning going forward. And I think that's an area the Kenya Kwanza administration needs to improve on.
That's David Monda, a political analyst and professor of political science at the City University of New York. He spoke with me from New York. In Uganda, the opposition party National Unity Platform, or NUP, says it's illegal for the police to suspend its nationwide mobilization tour. The party recently launched activities across the country, including meeting supporters, holding rallies, and opening offices in preparation for the next general election. But the police announced they were suspending opposition events after accusing the NUP and its leader, Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, of inciting violence, defaming President Yoweri Museveni, and promoting sectarianism, as well as intimidating and harassing citizens. Attorney Medad Segona is a member of parliament and a leading member of the NUP. He tells VOA's Peter Cloche the police do not have the legal mandate to stop or indefinitely suspend activities of the party.
Well, first of all, it's an illegal pronouncement. It's not within the police power to suspend our meetings because these are not police meetings, they are our meetings, and they do not have the power to grant, deny or suspend permission. We have never sought permission from them, which is what I saw in their letter to us and subsequently in their communication to the public in their press release. But they granted us permission. We have never sought permission from them because it's not within the law. The court has repeatedly pointed out to them that it's not within their power. Secondly, we have never and never appeared their lawful terms of saying, one, they shall not hold processions. You shall hold your meetings in town halls. Why must we hold meetings in town halls? First of all, it's a humongous cost on us to hire a town hall. Secondly, we have many supporters to address. They cannot fit in any town hall.
They said you had an agreement, and the agreement is to abide by the guidelines, but the NUP violated the agreement on so many occasions.
We've never had that agreement. Our agreement has been and can only be with the law. They have never even told us those things they are talking about now. They simply purported to permit, and we never sought permission. But we said, fine, we can ignore the language. It's a language based on ignorance of the law or simply contempt of the law. So we have never had such agreement.
But, Medad, the police are saying that the mobilization activities which they suspended were being used to incite violence, promote sectarianism, and make a legitimate cause for removal of an elected government and issuance of defamatory statement against President Yoweri Museveni. How do you respond to that?
First of all, it's absolutely false. We have not incited or advised anybody to remove Yoweri Museveni except in accordance with the Constitution of the Republic of Uganda. And Honorable Chagulanyi has been consistent and persistent on this call. He says we shall remove him in accordance with the Constitution. Secondly, we have not incited anyone to have any other person.
The police are also saying that in all areas where NUP mobilization activities have been carried out, there has been total breaches of the guidelines that's causing public disorder, loss of business, unnecessary jam and vandalization, loss of lives where Norma Mugisha died and 10 others were injured in an NUP convoy.
Now, first of all, even for a road traffic accident, you must blame somebody and you make it appear so overtly criminal. I'm surprised. In Yoweri Museveni's convoys, I don't know how many people have died, even when he's not being pursued by anyone. But Mugisha's death is regrettable. He was our member. It was an accident and totally an accident. Secondly, the vandalization. I'm even suspicious now that the police or the state could be deploying some people to cause chaos. But that's the very purpose of the law, and that's why that's the very purpose of the information. We relay to the police, we inform them of our meeting so that they can provide security to people and against those that may intend to cause a breach of peace. So what the police is saying is an abdication of duty and responsibility on their part, because it is their responsibility to keep law and order, protect people and their property. There is no breach of peace. Where can they cite a breach of peace? Even when our people found somebody holding a pistol and close to our president, he was not beaten. He was not assaulted. They simply pointed out to the police and said, please take this one out of here so that he does not cause a breach of peace and law. So those are excuses. I think Genome 7 does not want his opponents to organize, and he can only find reason to disrupt peaceful gathering. From Kabale to Arua, we've not had the incident of breach of peace.
Now that he said what the police have done by suspending the nationwide mobilization tour of the NUP, what are you going to do about it?
Our duty is to inform them. We shall inform them, receive a response from them, and we shall determine our next course of action.
That's Medard Segonam, the Ugandan Member of Parliament and the leading member of the NUP. He spoke with VOA's Peter Klote from Kampala. In Ghana, a prominent parliamentarian from the main opposition party, National Democratic Congress, or NDC, is planning to retire from parliament in 2025. Attorney Cletus Avoka, who is a six-term lawmaker, represents the Bila in the country's Upper West region. He has served in several roles, including majority leader in parliament and as Minister of Lands and Forestry, as well as Minister for Interior. Supporters say Avoka has demonstrated a commitment toward entrenching the tenets of democracy in Ghana with his well-articulated contribution to debates and measures being considered in parliament. To learn more about his decision to step down and what the future holds for him, VOA's Peter Klote reached Cletus Avoka.
You know, all things being equal, there is a beginning and there is an end. And then it is important that whatever we do, you look at the timing and the circumstances. I have contested all the 8 elections in the Fourth Republic since 1992. I contested 1992-96. I'm one of the oldest MPs in Parliament. Out of the 8 elections, I lost 2 and then won 6. So I'm one of the long 7 MPs in Parliament House today.
Do you think the time has now come for you to retire? Because some people are saying your experience is required to at least groom the up-and-coming lawmakers. What do you think?
It's appropriate to say that. But you know, the environment differs from what is happening in the U.S. and then what is happening in a third world country like Ghana. In 1992 and 96, those who were campaigning for me or assisting me have now grown up. And then are eyeing to be also recognized. So I have achieved what is reasonable in life, in the sense that I have been in Parliament 6 times. This is my 24th year. If I don't contest next year, 24 years in Parliament. I have been a minister for about 4 ministries. I have been the majority leader of the Parliament of Ghana between 2010 and 2013. So I think that it is appropriate now for me to step aside and let a younger fellow take over.
Have you identified somebody you would want to pass the torch to?
Yes, I have done so, but advisedly. These days, it is a democratic dispensation, so you cannot say that I want this man to go. The fellow will have to subject himself to primaries, to elect at the local level, at the constituency level, and then, of course, at the national level. So what I have tried to do is to build a legacy behind for the young people who are behind me to emulate. For example, I built a legacy of integrity. I'm not boasting, but I have been regional minister and minister for lands and forests before, minister for environment, science and technology, interior minister, and the majority leader. All these since 1992, you've not heard my name in public as being corrupt or abusing my office or doing anything untoward. I have established an unblemished record. So I've been winning because of my humility. Humility is very important, transparency, and then honesty. And then I serve everybody. So if you are able to imbibe these values, then succeeding me will be very easy. And I've tried to inculcate this to those who are behind me. So I wouldn't say that I have somebody, I have groomed one individual, and then pick him and say support him. No, it would be wrong for me to do that because it was not only one fellow who supported me. And I tried to build a team and not to build one person. Mm. So I'm confident that with this legacy, anybody who takes over from me will try to follow up.
So what is next for you after you hang your proverbial boots in Parliament?
What I want to do is to work hard so that the National Democratic Congress, NDC, under our flag bearer, John Mahama, his elder John Dramani Mahama, will win the 2024 elections. We want a paradigm shift from what has happened in Ghana for the past 7 years. where there's now a culture of silence in all the departments, agencies, and in the country. We want John Mahama to take over and then see how we can minimize the incidence of hardship and suffering that we are going through in Ghana today. So I'm going to focus my attention first in making sure that, or in trying to assist the NDC to win the elections in 2024, both parliamentary and presidential. After that, if your mom is in office, I will use my experience and knowledge to serve the party and the government in power so that we can build a stable democracy in this country. I'm doing this against the background of good health and strength.
What do you think are the chances of the NDC winning back power in 2024?
Oh, very, very bright. The NDC's chances are very, very bright. We will not be complacent. We are not complacent, and we should not be complacent at all, because the poverty is very pervasive, the suffering is very pervasive, and then you know in Africa and in some other places these days it's money that talks. It's monocracy, no more democracy. So even though we have the goodwill, and then we think that we can win the elections hands down, we are not taking anything to chance, because the current government, the incumbent government, has a lot of resources, and then they can do a lot of things that are not in tune with modern democracy. So we are going to be vigilant in the elections. We'll work hard, we'll campaign hard, we'll be very vigilant on election day, we at the police station, and then we'll be very vigilant at the collation center. And I'm confident that at the close of the day, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama will clinch victory, and then we'll also win the parliamentary majority.
That's Attorney Nicoletta Savoka, who is a sixth-term lawmaker in Ghana. He spoke with my colleague, Peter Klote. One of the world's most popular apps, TikTok, is under growing scrutiny in Kenya over what critics see as explicit content, hate speech, and offensive behavior. An activist has petitioned Parliament to ban the Chinese app, even as millions of young Kenyans use it for entertainment, social connections, or even to make money. Francis Ontamwa reports from Nairobi.
Then you end up with something that is so messy.
Anna Montez is a minor TikTok sensation. She shares live tutorials on makeup artistry at least 3 times a week. Not long ago, she had a conventional job, but quit to concentrate on her passion. Today, Montez says she's making more money than her job ever offered.
I've seen myself get followers. I've seen myself grow up to 20,000 new followers in like 2 weeks. And with that comes customers, comes interactions, comes brand collaborations, a lot of things. So that has been a new experience, interesting, and I'm loving this space.
Montez is just one of millions of Kenyans who use TikTok, and one of a growing group leveraging the social media platform to try to make a living. But Montez's prospects could be threatened if an activist has his way. Bob Ndolo, an IT specialist and a father of two, once TikTok shut down in Kenya, recently submitted a petition to Parliament asking lawmakers to consider a ban on the app.
With TikTok, you go to a live coverage and you'll find those young girls that you can call your sister, your auntie, your mother. They are all there, yeah, half naked. And what they are doing, they are selling their bodies.
According to a 2023 survey by Reuters Institute Digital News report, Kenya is a global powerhouse in the use of TikTok. 54% of Kenyans utilize the platform for various reasons. The Kenyan government says TikTok and other social media apps contribute $3 million every month to Kenya's economy. Recently, President William Ruto held a virtual meeting with TikTok CEO, who agreed to implement some restrictions on the app and establish an official presence in Kenya. Globally, numerous countries have imposed partial or total bans on the Chinese-owned application on privacy and security grounds. In Africa, Senegal and Somalia have banned TikTok, and at least 3 other nations are considering similar measures. Bright Gameli is a cybersecurity researcher.
Governments are supposed to be able to come up with regulatory processes and policies that can govern the way such foreign applications are being used in the country. Right now, if those measures are not put in place, how are we going to make sure that we are protecting ourselves and our kids?
Montez says anti-TikTok activists are not being realistic about the modern world.
And I do understand why it's a concern. But the truth is that these things have happened in real life. They have not started now. So as things change, as technology improves, these things will still penetrate into these spaces. That does not mean that you ban their space entirely. Yeah? We don't all have to suffer.
Parliament has yet to begin formal debate on the proposed ban. In the meantime, Kenyans find themselves torn between preserving digital rights for its creative youth and keeping the online environment safe for its population. Francis Ontomwa for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's go to Abuja and join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Africa Women's Youth Handball Championship got underway in Tunisia on Saturday. The Tunisian under-18 handball team drew with their Guinean counterparts 18-18 in a Group A Day 1 game played on Saturday evening in Monastir. Algeria lost 18-28 points to Nigeria in their first Group A match. In Group B, Egypt won their match against DR Congo by 4-10-0, while Angola defeated Morocco 37-15 points. Under the competition's format, the 8 teams will qualify for the tournament's quarterfinals on Tuesday. The top 4 teams in the final standings will qualify for the 2024 Women's Youth World Championship. In badminton, Egypt is set to serve as the first host of the 2024 Para Badminton World Circuit as it is scheduled to stage the opening event of the year. The Para Badminton International in Cairo is due to take place from January 22nd to 28th, 2024, and is preceding the main event on the calendar. The World Championships are scheduled to be held in the Thai city of Pattaya from February 20th to the 25th. It will be the first chance for athletes to earn world ranking points, which count towards qualification for the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games. In mixed martial art news, UFC middleweight contender, South African professional mixed martial artist Dricus du Plessis believes former champion Nigerian-born Israel Adesanya churned out one of his worst performances when he lost his title to Sean Strickland at the UFC 293 last Saturday. Du Plessis was supposed to fight Adesanya, but an injury led to Strickland stepping in and defeating Adesanya for the middleweight title. Du Plessis thinks Adesanya looked off from the start and didn't fight his best.
Now Adesanya was missing every shot. His timing was off, his speed was off. But, you know, Strickland did what he had to do to win that fight. And in my honest opinion, you know, like I said, congratulations, Strickland. He did what he needed to do to win that fight, and he did it great. But it wasn't something special that he did. He fought the exact same fight he always fought. He fought the exact same way he always fought.
In athletics, Ghana is considering increasing the number of the country's athletes to the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. At the Tokyo Olympics, the West African nation was represented by only 14 athletes across 5 disciplines, with Sam Tiai's bronze medal in boxing being the sole medal won. Ghana's chief omission for the Paris 2024 Games, Isaac Dua, is optimistic about increasing the country's representation in the upcoming global tournament in Paris.
We are less than a year ago, and their plans are far advanced. Major team Ghana qualified. For which we are strength has always been boxing, athletics, and those are the few swimmers who qualify to their vitality, and also judo and weightlifting.
And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports.
Thanks, Samson. Now, let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in the time of conflict and in time of peace. Here is one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. There is broad consensus that the decision to include the African Union as the 24th member of the 20 group is highly significant. Previous efforts to give the African continent such a status have been unsuccessful. But as Africans everywhere embrace this welcome status, they should bear in mind what was the sentiment in the Group of 20 in this year's summit. It was made clear that the group is not the real instrument or body to tackle growing or pressing international issues or geopolitical issues, but essentially an economic one. Although they could take into mind the impact of geopolitical difficulties on their activities. This being the case, the African Union may have to take further steps to enhance its status at the international table when are pressing geopolitical issues as well. When the OAU was transformed in South Africa, after the end of apartheid and the end of white minority rule, it was the belief that the time was ripe to adopt the name Union. Of course, Union means more. And if you look at the way the European Union has gone, you could see they moved from the coal and steel community, then they moved to the European Economic Community, and then to the European Union. During those periods, there were many strong institution building to go with it. So the African Union will have to see what institutional developments it will have to undertake. Of course, the African continent has moved from the loose groups, the Moroccan group, the Liberian group, and then at the wake of the 1960-64 Congo crisis, the move to creating the Organization of African Unity. So the task ahead will be difficult because to go through these stages will require African states to take difficult decisions. If you look at the European Union, they have today a president of the European Union. They have a parliament of the European Union. They have a central bank of the European Union. They have a court of the European Union. And this gives them the advantage of making important decisions at the international table. They also have their own currency, the euro. And it's not difficult, it's not easy to become a member of the European currency. So these things have to be taken in mind as the African moves along. Many African states have been hesitant to move further. But if Africa is to maintain its status at the international table with muscles to make difficult decisions, then it has to be engaged in institution building. Right now, it is very loose. When the Assembly of Heads of State and Government meets, they decide on who should be the current chairman. In between the summits, you have the Secretariat of the African Union who is given the authority to run the Secretariat. All this will have to change if Africa will have a strong voice. So as we all applaud what was achieved in New Delhi under the leadership of Premier Modi, we should also know that Africa has a lot more to do to strengthen the status of the African Union at the international table. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And now it's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with the music from the continent. Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. From the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us. Salam.